Well, this fella now who has joined us turned a hobby into a major social force in this nation. With only a few spare parts and a soldering iron, he privately designed and built what has become a revolution in the home, the Apple computer series. Would you greet Stephen Wozniak?
You're very famous, Stephen.
Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Airphone Elijah. I'm joined by the very talented writer, Mr. King Caney. Welcome, Leander. Mr. Adam Caney.
Adam Christensen.
We've also got Adam Christensen from the MattCast podcast. Welcome back, Adam.
Yeah, I don't write, so luckily.
You don't write at all?
Oh, really?
Lucky you. Very rarely. The thing is, I can write a good blog post, but it'll take me like 4 or 5 hours. So it's just not my efficient
Sounds
way
like
of communication. That's why I'm not a blogger. I am a podcaster. I can talk
it's
into a mic.
It's much easier to talk, right?
Well, for me. I mean, I know people who can, you know, write blog posts in their sleep. And they're really good at it. But
then you hear them on a podcast and you're like, whoa, Snoozeville.
We all have our talents.
Exactly. I want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this week's episode. You guys have heard me talk about Squarespace. And I love them as a web host. They're fantastic, great customer service. If you guys need a website for any purpose, if you're building an e-commerce website, if you are maybe trying to showcase your work online, you're an artist or photographer, you cannot get better than Squarespace. Head over to squarespace.com/cultcast. Sign up for a free trial. It's so easy to build a website with Squarespace. You don't need to know any code. We're going to talk a little bit about them later in the show as well and tell you how you can save a little bit of money when you order the service. And then also, they just released some cool new iPhone apps, which I think are actually super helpful to help you manage your websites. Guys, I thought we could talk about a little bit of fun news to start. This has actually kind of been a long time coming for me. I doubt Adam or Leander, you guys will care about this, but let me just put this out there. So Logitech has just released an iOS 7 game controller called the PowerShell. And if you've seen the picture, it kind of wraps around your iPhone. And then allows you to have a D-pad and buttons and stuff that you could play with your iOS games. Do either of you guys game very often on the iPhone?
No,
I didn't think so.
Adam, I do a little.
You seem like an avid gamer.
I would do casual games. I could be an avid gamer, yeah. But again, I don't let myself do that because I'll get sucked down the rabbit hole and then never find my way back out, and then I'll never have a podcast again. So,
well, don't ever play World of Warcraft then. Let me just put that out there.
Oh, man. I have friends who do that, and they actually do World of Warcraft podcasts.
Yes. I know. That's the next step, isn't it?
Yeah. I love games, but I just can't do long-winded ones. So I tend to stick to the casual ones where I can pop in, play for 10 or 15 minutes, and then get out.
I play one game, Kingdom Rush.
You still play that game?
Well, not really, but I mean,
okay.
That's the only game I ever really got into.
That was a great game. Well, anyway, let me tell you guys about the PowerShell a little bit more. It's $99. Logitech just released this thing, and the reason I'm excited for it is because, you know, I like touch games too, Adam, and when I'm just trying to like burn a little bit of time, maybe I'm at the airport or something, right. But touch games are great. But I think this is going to be, at least I'm hoping this is going to be a kind of a first step into like real games coming to iOS and, you know, games that are much more not touch-based and just kind of like more serious, gamier games, as I said on Twitter. You know, like games that gamers want to play. Games that you would find on Nintendo, games that you would find on Nintendo DS, something like that.
Well, do you think having this controller, the experience would translate?
I do. Yeah, I really do. I really do. Because most gamers that I know hate touch games. They might play them to pass time, but no one's really excited about them. It's, you know, just something that you play when you are just trying to, you know, pass some time. And you wouldn't want to spend 7 or 8 hours playing a touch game just because it's not the best experience for games, in my opinion, and many other gamers. So I think this could be really cool.
They've been clamoring for this for a long time, haven't they? But a lot of people have been asking for this kind of thing for
yeah.
For
I don't know why it took so long for Apple to allow these. It seemed like a natural fit right off the bat. I mean, you have this beautiful screen. Why not be able to use it with a controller?
Yeah, yeah. Would it work with an iPad size controller?
This one, I don't think so, because it actually plugs into the Lightning port on the bottom of your iPhone.
Yeah, it wraps around the phone.
And then it wraps around the phone, exactly. Although it's probably not going to be super hard to build one for a larger device.
I mean, it looks almost like a PSP, a PlayStation Portable, after you kind of put the two things together.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm looking at the list of games, you know, and like Bastion, I did play for
Bastion's
a little bit.
A great game.
It's an awesome game. Yep. Yeah. And this new one, Oceanhorn, I saw show up on the App Store. I almost bought it, but I'm like, no, I'm going to get sucked into this thing. So those are the kinds of decisions I make. But then the other thing that's nice about this, I was noticing, I just read through this, is that looks like it has an extra battery too, so it's going to extend the life of your device. 1500 milliamps, that's pretty good.
What's 1500 milliamps? Like, is like a whole day's charge, I think.
Yeah. Oh, a couple, I think.
Is it really that much? Okay.
Yeah.
Leander, what were you saying?
What's Bastion? Should I be playing that? I just looked at the screenshot. It looks awesome.
Yeah, Bastion's like it's like a fantasy adventure game. And it was really big on the Xbox. I know that. I don't know if they have it on PlayStation. It probably was. It's one of those games that just makes it to all the platforms.
Yeah, but it took it a while to get to iOS. I mean, it's an older game, I think.
I think it is, too. Yeah. I think there's actually a second one.
But it's beautiful. Yeah, and the audio is great in it. And, I mean, that's what I really appreciate. I guess maybe because I have a little bit of an art background. I really appreciate the art and style of games.
Stand.
So.
It's only fast twitch, you know. I hate that fast twitch though, because I get killed straight away and I go, "Fuck it." I'm just, oh, sorry. I've had, you know, like.
Let's see here. 12 minutes in. Check.
Sorry.
Can you said bleep that French out? Toast. Yeah. That's what Leander says when he gets really frustrated. French toast. Sorry, Leander. What were you saying before you cussed?
Well, I hate
killed,
you know,
children?
Like I pick up any of those fast twitch games where you're supposed to shoot something, you know, I get killed immediately, and then that's it. I've lost interest.
It's always fun watching people play those kinds of games.
Yeah, Bastion wasn't like that. I mean, it kind of walks you through, and it has a good progression to it, and it's got a nice story, and it's just beautiful. And I really did enjoy playing that. And the thing is though, I'm curious, Irfan, you know, for you, I don't like the smaller screen for those kinds of games, though. Like, I much prefer that on my iPad, even though it's got a touch interface to it. I don't know how many I'd want to play on my iPhone.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry
screen. About the barking dog. My mailman's here. And as you guys know from previous episodes, my dog does not like it when people with mail or packages approach my house.
Mine either.
I don't like it on a smaller screen, so I would probably wait to get this for something like an iPad mini or even a full-size iPad Air. That would be really cool. Although I don't know how they would make one that you could hold in your hands that's attached to the actual device. That might be a little bit weird.
I think the killer application for something like this would be, if I was a game developer, I would look at adding support for this thing along with like a second screen interface. So, you know, using an Apple TV with AirPlay for the main game content and then having the controller, you know, have touch controls and other things on a second screen. I know you can do that sort of thing. So, you know, what's exciting to me about something like this is the possibilities now that developers have the option to use something like this.
Yeah, that's exactly what excites me about it as well, is just hopefully gamers are going to be able to do a lot cooler types of games on iOS now that they might have the attention of avid, you know, like hardcore gamers is the word I like to use, or the term. Uh-huh. So could be very cool. Let's talk about, since we're already talking about iPads, a rumor that we've heard before, but quite honestly, it just seems a little ridiculous to me, but I want to hear what you guys think. So, and that is the rumor of a 12.9-inch iPad. 12.9 inches in 2014. Yeah. This is being reported by Korea Times, but we've heard similar claims from the Wall Street Journal and some other analysts. Adam, Would you buy a freaking massive 13-inch iPad Air?
You know, the iPad. What people are kind of alluding to is the iPad Pro. Now that Apple's renamed the iPad as the iPad Air.
Oh. It's an
interesting thought, and it's funny because I actually have had this conversation now with a couple different people about the iPad and the MacBook Air. If you look at those two things, specifically the low-end 11-inch model and then the high-end, 128 iPad Air, mm-hmm. So you got same amount of storage in both, but basically you've got one with a keyboard, one without a keyboard. You can get these cool Logitech keyboards for your iPad Air, which basically turns it into almost an 11-inch, I guess a 9.7-inch Air. Mm-hmm. Everybody always loved the 12-inch MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. Remember that model that was hugely popular in certain circles? So it's weird. We're getting to this point where is the line between, if you had a 128, 12.9-inch Air, or even 11-inch iPad, and then you've got your 11-inch MacBook Air, I would imagine the pricing is going to be almost identical. So then it really becomes, what is your choice? It's like, I want the thing that has a keyboard attached, or I want the thing that, doesn't. And of course, one runs iOS and one's going to run OS 10. But for certain kinds of users, it creates an interesting thought process in terms of, like, where am I going to spend my money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, they would be very similar. I see what you're
Apple's kind of blurring the line of the use cases, right? It's just sort of like a 12.9-inch Air versus a 13-inch MacBook Air. Which one do I go for? Especially if I can get a Bluetooth keyboard with that 12-inch and one of these Logitech kinds of things, and it basically then is an a MacBook Air that's running iOS. It's weird. I don't know.
Leander, you've talked about going iPad only. Would you, if a 13-inch, let's just call it 13, let's just call it what it is. If it was on the market, would you purchase a 13-inch as opposed to, would you really? Just to have a larger screen real estate?
Yeah, I like the big screen. If they kept it light, if it didn't weigh a ton, it'd be awesome. It'd be great. And there would be no question that this would be a laptop, replacement. Laptop killer.
That's where I'm at with it. Can an iPad, once it hits that size, can it be? I think there's a segment of people where it totally would be a replacement for a Mac. Instead of buying a MacBook, a 13-inch MacBook Air, they're going to go for this thing because it comes down to, I think, how you use it. Right.
Yeah, very true.
I don't think your artist who lives day to day in, Photoshop is going to do that. But again, that kind of guy is not going to go for a 13-inch MacBook Air. They're going to get the 15-inch MacBook Retina. Right. Mm-hmm. So, it's the question becomes, who's buying the low end Airs, MacBook Airs right now? And would this replace that? And I think it would in a lot of ways.
Do you think they'll ever add multiple windows, so that you can have in a Windows RT tablet, you can have.
See, that's exactly what I was going to bring up. So now Apple's going to create a Windows RT version of the iPad. Windows can't even sell the Windows RT version.
Yeah, I kind of don't see that happening. That's why it brings up this very interesting use case in my mind. It's like they're starting to blur the lines, but I don't think they're willing to go far enough to merge iOS and OS X yet.
I think that's if you're multitasking or if you're in a modern work environment, I think that's probably the biggest drawback to using an iPad full time is the ability to switch between applications.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
And, I'm not really familiar with Android, but doesn't Android have some pretty good application switching in it? I think there's some, I'm going down a rabbit hole here because I don't actually know what I'm talking about.
My guess is it would be better than iOS, but I haven't spent enough time with Android tabs because I'm a true Apple fan, so I try to keep my distance.
But if you had a big screen, then you would there'd be more possibility, wouldn't there, for that kind of bringing in multiple information sources.
Yeah, here would be my worry because you look at what Apple has done with the iWork applications. And I almost get the sense that Apple wants to push things the other way, where they want to make our desktop machines single back to single window devices.
Oh gosh, I hope. I really hope not.
I don't think they're going to do that. I in no way, shape, or form think they're going to do that. But you look at hints and things like what they did with the iWork suite with getting rid of floating palettes, and you're like, they're thinking in a direction that I'm not sure I really like.
I don't know. Yeah. I hate floating palettes. I always hated them. They suck really bad.
Floating palettes? What?
They suck. They're awful.
I'm not even sure what you mean by floating palettes. What do you mean?
You know how they have a little palette that floats up, but you have several windows for you know, in a workflow, right?
Within an application. Window.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a palette for, you know, for choosing different tools, and a palette for the layouts.
Right. I see what you mean. Yeah, I do like the unified look. Like, I know Photoshop used to have all those floating palettes, and then they unified everything. I like everything to live within one application window. I'm following you now. Sorry.
Right. So you do like that. So then, I mean, if you're doing that, really, then they just have to get better at the application switching more so than maybe letting you have multiple application windows open, wouldn't you think? I mean,
well, yeah, to a certain degree, because I like having the window unified, but I often don't use it in full screen mode. In fact, I hardly ever use that feature of any app that has it. I like to see the other windows below it. So on an iPad, I mean, that's, you essentially would be talking about a Windows RT version now, where you're running some weird hybrid between iOS.
But do you do that on your built-in 15-inch screen? Like, I work in that mode when I have my laptop at home and I've got it connected to my large monitor.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm noticing more and more when I'm just working on my laptop. I mean, pretty much most of the applications, to see everything in them, I kind of need them expanded almost full screen. So I very rarely have sort of this layered window effect when I'm just working on my 15-inch monitor, just because I can't, most applications, you can't see everything at that point, at that sort of resolution.
I find that to be especially true on the Retina display. I feel like everything's much larger on the Retina display. Mm-hmm. So I am often having to maximize the windows of everything that I'm using. But I still don't put it into full screen mode. Do you use full screen mode very often?
No. I do the maximized window thing. But in essence, at that point, aren't you kind of almost in full screen mode?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're almost there. You're like 90% there. But at least I can see everything that's underneath.
Right.
You know?
No, I'm
so I can switch back and forth easily without having to double tap the home button and then then swivel over and then hit the application I want and have that go full screen.
Well, anyway. We're talking a desktop, right? So there's no home button.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's only going to be a matter of time before they get rid of the entire keyboard on the MacBook Pro and just put one home button on it, right in the center.
Well, and so that, I mean, that brings it back to this 12-inch, you know, this 12-inch iPad, because I mean, you have a 13-inch screen, and when I'm on, you know, my 13-inch Air, it's this issue is compounded, right? I'm having to pretty much have my apps in a maximized window mode. So I'm in essence switching back and forth anyway. I mean, sometimes it's nice to be able to slide something out of the way and, you know, click behind it and refocus things. But that may just be a mental exercise of, you know, changing my thinking. I don't know.
You know, here's one of the hidden benefits also of having a 12.9-inch iPad. You could essentially have like a strap on the back, so you could use it for self-defense in case someone attacks you. You can like use it as a shield, like a full-size medieval shield. Yeah. So there's that benefit. I'm sure we'll see lots more stories of people, you know, getting shot and having their iPad save their life because it covers their entire torso because it's so large.
Uh-huh.
So there's that
TV
benefit.
Dinner off too.
You can eat your TV dinner off of it. You could bake things on it in the oven. I mean, there's a lot of a lot of features that you may never have thought of.
So, hey,
I want to talk about the iPad Mini. Adam, I'm especially interested to hear what you think about the color accuracy issues. I just got one. But before we do that, can we give some props to Squarespace.com. I love saying it that way. For sponsoring this week's episode. Adam, I know that you're a Squarespace fan. We've talked about him before.
Yeah.
And yep. I always tell people their customer service is great, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel like they are kind of like the Apple of the web host world in that they really care about design a lot. And they make it really easy to create beautiful websites quickly that will look great on any device that visits, whether that be an iPad, a Windows phone, a 12.9-inch iPad Air Pro, yep. whatever you have. And they just released some new iPhone apps. And have you heard about these?
Yeah, I have. I haven't had much of a chance to play around with them.
Okay,
I'm usually on the website when I'm messing around with my Squarespace stuff because, again, it's just so easy. You just kind of pop in there and edit your content, move things around. If you want to change your design, pick a new template. You know, they make it super simple.
They do make it really simple, guys. Truly. Well, this is really cool. So Squarespace, let me know. They just released some new iOS 7 designed apps. So they kind of have the iOS 7 aesthetic. And these are the kinds of things that Squarespace does that you just don't get from other web hosts. They build apps that make it easy for you to run your websites from your iPhone on apps that are native to your iPhone. So, for example, they just released Squarespace Blog, which does what you think it would do. It allows you to easily draft posts and schedule and review posts on your website from your iPhone. And then also lets you monitor and manage comments on your blog. And all of that right from the palm of your hand. Also, Squarespace Metrics. I've used hosts before that don't even give you website metrics. Squarespace has an app that you can use called Squarespace Metrics that lets you monitor all your analytics on your website. And you can view unique visitors, projections, and charts, and page views, all this great stuff. And also... this one's pretty cool. Are you a photographer at all, Adam? Do you use a camera?
Amateur.
Okay. Professional amateur photographer for the sake of the conversation. Well, I am a photographer, and I found this to be really useful. So they also released an app called Squarespace Portfolio. This is really cool. So what it allows you to do is if you're going to visit a client, you can essentially connect to your website, download a bunch of photos that you have on your website, and it will show them formatted to your device on your iPad or iPhone. So if you go to visit a client, you can show them photos that are on your website, and it takes a minimal amount of effort. Usually when I do this, something like this, you would need to export from Lightroom or from Aperture or something, and then get them onto your device somehow. And all these apps included for free, all with your Squarespace account. Squarespace is always innovating, making it easier and better. Easier especially to run your website. So I want to encourage everyone, head on over to squarespace.com/cultcast. Sign up for a free trial account. You can use Squarespace absolutely for free. I think it's a 2-week free trial. It doesn't cost you anything. They don't even ask for your credit card information. Check it out, and if you like it, you can use the code cultcast11 at checkout. You'll save 10% off your order. And that's whether you order a month of service, a year of service, you're going to save 10%. And thank you, Squarespace, for sponsoring this episode of the CultCast. You guys may not know this, but Leander, he's not cheap. To get Leander Caney on your show, you got to pay him big bucks. Yeah, right. Otherwise, when he finds out he's not getting paid, he just hangs up. Doesn't matter if you're in the middle of conversation. Especially now that he's got his book out. He's such a hot item. It's like I could barely even talk to him. Yeah, have a 5-minute conversation and you get an invoice.
I know. Leo had to pay the big bucks to get on the Mac Break yesterday.
Oh, that's right. You were on Mac Break Weekly yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard Leo fawned all over your book and asked you to like go out to dinner with him.
Oh, yeah. He was all over that.
That's great. Are you? Sorry. Go ahead, Leander.
Oh, he was great. Yeah, he was awesome. He couldn't ask for better. He was great. Super.
That's awesome. Now, I don't even think Leo's getting one of these, a free signed copy of Jony Ive, the genius behind Apple's greatest products. Boom, rolls right off the tongue. And we promised last week that we were going to give away 5 free copies with Leander Caney's signature and your name in the book. Now, we said we were going to announce the winners this week. We asked people to let us know why they deserved a free copy, free signed copy on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCultCast. But we're actually going to give you guys an extra week. We had a ton of people go ahead and let us know, but some of you found out later in the week, and you're asking me where you could enter to win. So we're going to extend for a week. You guys get a whole extra week to sign up. Head over to our Facebook page. There is a post on the Facebook page asking you why you deserve a free copy. Leave a comment there, and we will, guaranteed, announce the winners next week. We're going to announce 5 winners. And along with your free book, as I promised, you'll get at least 200 to 500 words of personal message from Leander. Okay, you're not going to get that, but you will get your name signed and maybe a thank you.
I'll write a message, yeah.
Yeah, write a personal message and probably maybe like a topless Polaroid of some kind of Leander. I'm just ad-libbing here. I can't guarantee that's going to be included, but I'll see if I can talk him into it. So head on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCultCast for that. Adam.
Yes.
I just received my iPad mini Retina.
Yeah.
And before I did, I started hearing rumblings on the internet about people who had gotten theirs. And then I read on Anontech that though it is Retina and much higher quality as far as crispness goes, the color accuracy is actually not that great. And then I read that it's pretty much on par with the regular iPad mini and that it's having troubles displaying the full color gamut.
And RGB also color gamut.
The RGB color gamut, thank you. And then also displaying colors accurately. Care to comment about the issue?
Sure. Where do you use your iPad mostly?
Well, in my bedroom, but...
And how's the lighting in there?
Dark. But you know, will say I have
much
noticed...
Much ado about nothing is what it is.
I thought you were going to say.
But here's the reality. I mean, how many people are using their iPad mini or plan to use their iPad mini for color accurate work? I mean, it's cool that, you know, maybe you could. And actually some of the iPads, I think they compare this to the iPad Air, right? Which has a better color gamut on the screen. Mm-hmm. But the reality is even my iPad Air, I'm not using it to do color accurate work. And it's still pretty darn good. And the other thing about it is that, I mean, this is really just it's a geek out thing. It's a comparison thing. And I think a lot of this information comes out of, is it DisplayMate who does all the analysis of these things?
Yeah, a lot of it, right.
And those guys know displays. I mean, they're smart. They know what they're talking about. And they've often put the iPad displays at sort of the top of their list. And I think most recently, some of the Kindle Fire HD displays, I think, are coming out, you know, slightly ahead of the iPad screens. But in reality, it's just posturing. It's just, you know, saying, hey, we got the best display out there. But the average consumer, this is not going to make one bit of difference to them, because you're going to look at any of these displays, be it the Kindle one, the iPad Air, iPad Mini. I don't care which one you look at. They're gorgeous displays. They look great. And most people are not going to tell a difference whatsoever.
I agree. So. It is kind of a geek out thing for sure.
It's a geek out thing,
and
sure.
Especially when you start getting into forums and you have people comparing photos of their dogs and cats with the two iPads side by side. But I did notice, with that said, I did notice a difference. And I have an iPad 3, which has a Retina display, and even the iPad 3 and iPad 4 are more color accurate and have a higher RGB display gamut than the iPad mini. And I noticed that when I booted up the Netflix app, for example, the red, which is normally very bright red, kind of looked more orange. So I think from what I read, the color display suffers usually in the blue gamut range and then also in the red gamut range. So it may not be accurate, and then it's also just not as capable as the iPad Air. The only reason I think this is a big deal, by the way, is because of all the stories that we heard previously where basically everyone was saying the iPad mini is exactly like the iPad Air, and they're just different sizes. They have the same internals, but I don't think that's true. I mean, the screen is not as high quality as the iPad Air. And if you are a photographer, you know, and if I were showing my work with that cool Squarespace app I just told you guys about, and somebody was like, why do those colors look off? I would want to know that, at least. You guys with me?
Yeah, kind of.
Is the average person really going to notice it,
no.
though? You know,
I know. What did you look thing. It up for? You had a perfectly good Mac Mini, you know, iPad Mini. You hate it because you looked up some ranting on the internet.
But
and
you
it
know
actually
what?
Matches. It matches the old iPad Mini. This was the other thing I was going to say, is I went into the Apple store this week because I hadn't seen the new Retina display. And they have on the tables, they have the Retina iPad mini right next to the $299, you know, prior generation mini. And I put them side by side and started swiping through things and looking at things just to see, you know, could I tell the difference? How much does the the Retina display matter? And when I was at a normal viewing distance, even the whole Retina thing, I mean, those pixels are so small. Maybe it's because I have old eyes.
No, it's ridiculous. John Brownlee, when he wrote a review of the Mini last year, when he got in, he said, because it wasn't Retina, he said he couldn't even look at it. He couldn't even look at the screen.
It sounds like something John would say.
Exactly. It was like someone,
disgusted
like some
him.
Filthy old, smelly old bum took a poo in his eyes. It was awful. And now, you know, now he loves the Mini. It's so ridiculously over the top.
Well, with all that said, I do really, I would say I don't love it. I really like it a lot. If it were as accurate as the iPad Air, I would love it. But the size and everything else about it are just divine. And I'm not discouraging anyone from buying it. It's a great product, and I really love mine. I just was just a tad bit disappointed.
Yeah, don't read the forums. Don't read sites like Cult of Mac that report this nonsense. I mean,
yeah, that's the problem. I read Cult of Mac.
Exactly.
Well, the other question I have is, you know, even on the Air, and I can't figure this out. So there's been this big thing about the move to IGZO, you know, technology Air displays versus amorphous silicon. But I think depending upon the supplier, I think it's only Sharp that's doing the IGZO stuff. So, and Apple has multiple suppliers. So isn't there some inherent differences in the display technology itself that can impact these things? And do we know, are all the mini displays out there created equal, and are all the iPad Air displays created equal? You know, if you have a Sharp one versus a Samsung one versus a, I mean, really?
No,
does
now you're
know?
Now you're tr- no, I don't know, but I now you're truly in geek out zone. You know, like when you read forums and there's people who will only buy, for instance, a lens that has a specific serial number at the end, or like it's no, like, and then people are going to start going to the Apple Store and buying minis and returning them if they're not from a specific country. Because they know that the displays are going to be inferior. Poor
but, I
Apple.
Mean, I'm just curious. I mean, how do we know which one they tested? Were they testing an IGZO display? Were they testing, you know, the amorphous silicon technology?
Well, are you saying that you think that the minis are using both kinds of technology?
I'm
saying
thought
they
I
were
don't
just...
know.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, it's my understanding that only Sharp makes the IGZO stuff, and maybe I'm wrong on that. But Apple uses multiple suppliers, so if it's true that only Sharp makes IGZOs, then and Apple's using multiple suppliers, then they all can't be IGZO displays. But I have no proof of that. That's a bit of research that I've wanted to do, and nobody seems to be talking about that.
Yeah, that seems like it might be kind of hard to find out.
Oh yeah, it's all
just send
all
an email
chain,
to Apple HR. Just ask them.
But I think the amorphous silicon technology was the kind of the better technology in terms of color accuracy and stuff like that. I think IGZO has some advantages in terms of brightness and some other things, but I don't know that the two technologies are created equal when it comes to color gamuts and things like that. So I don't know if that's factoring into this. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't know either. I read on the internet that somebody was saying, I forget who it was. I forget what website I was reading. It might have been a non-tech, but I'm not totally sure, that Apple has put so much of their effort into IGZO, and they ended up going up with that technology, whereas what was the other technology you were just talking about, Adam?
Amorphous silicon. Whatever that is. I have no idea what this stuff is.
I don't either, but it sounds cool, doesn't it? And I wish it were in the iPad mini. But they were saying that technology has become superior, and yet Apple's still not using it.
Well, that's what Apple was using, and then they moved away with this IGZO stuff because I think IGZO gives some battery advantages and also some thinness stuff, and, you know, so that's what they're going for. And so they may have, maybe they compromised, you know, and said, you know, we're going to put the battery life and the thinness of this thing in front of this color accuracy, because most of the people buying these things, they're not going to notice the difference. They don't care. The display looks gorgeous. You pick it up and it looks gorgeous. My movies look gorgeous, you know, so it's only guys like us, again, that are going to sit there and compare one to the other, you know, down to, oh, that red's slightly orange.
I really honestly don't think that, you know, that 99% of people do not care.
Yep.
No, exactly. I think you're right. Most people
it's just
care.
Tech podcasters. They're going on about this yesterday on Mac Break Weekly. I was like, what?
Yeah, let's move on. I'm tired of this.
Hold on. I want to read you this list of tech specs. It's only two pages long.
I know.
Bear with me. Okay, let's talk about something that's a little bit more useful in our lives. I've been wanting to have this conversation for a while, and I think this is a perfect opportunity. Let's talk about camera roll backups, if you will. I have been struggling with getting photos off my iOS devices in some good way. I'm not totally sure what I should be doing to back them up and get them off my device. Because, you know, you take photos and everyone takes videos and stuff, and then they just live on their iPhones forever. And no one has enough iCloud storage. I get an email every day from Apple telling me mine's full. So none of my photos are backed up automatically. And I wanted to know, what do you guys do to back up your iPhone photos, your iPad photos, just to kind of clear things off, but also have those photos, you know, be accessible to you? Adam, do you want to start and tell us what your strategy is?
I'm fanatic about having an empty camera roll. I hate having my camera roll be full of junk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will constantly just launch iPhoto and let it pull them all in. And then when it pops up that little dialogue that says, "Do you want to delete them off your phone?" I say yes.
Okay.
And then what I found is that most of the time I just want access to the most recent stuff that I've shot. You know, like if I'm out and about and I want to show someone a photo from something. So I just have a smart folder inside or a smart album inside my iPhoto that picks up all my photos from the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then I have my iTunes set to sync those photos back to my device. So they're just in the camera, you know, in the photo app, excuse me. So I just sync them back the last 6 months. So I always have that available to me. And frankly, with the also photo stream, you know, that keeps, and they just bumped that up, I think, right? It was the last 1,000, and I think they've made it larger. But between that and my little smart album that I sync back, I pretty much have access to the photos that I want, and then my camera roll is always empty. The only dilemma I have now, though, is when you delete stuff out of the camera roll,
mm-hmm.
there's a bug that's been existing in iOS for a long, long time where it leaves the little thumbnails that it generates behind, even though you've deleted everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll still eat up storage space. And the only way I know to clear that out is to either use a manual app like iPhone Explorer. What's the one from Ecamm that I'm blanking on? And go in and actually manually, like, delete those out, you know, those thumbnails out of there.
Oh, yeah. Or, you mean like an application lets you browse the data on your iPhone?
Yeah.
Like Discade. Discade 6.
Okay. Yeah. Any one of those, you can go in and you can go into the camera thumbnails and, you know, delete out the thumbnails. It'll rebuild them. But mostly I just end up having to restore. I had this on my iPhone recently because I was like, had nothing in my camera roll. But when I went into usage, it's like, you've got 1.3 gigabytes of camera stuff in your camera roll. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I don't. It's empty. And I guess it's all these little
things. Did you say that out loud?
And they build up over time. And even though I'm diligent about deleting stuff out of my camera roll, it was still eating up all that data. It drives me nuts. And apparently this bug's been around for like the last 3 versions of iOS. I don't know why Apple doesn't fix it.
Obviously not a very high priority for them.
Anyway, that's what I do.
Okay, no, that's great. Well, let me ask you, why do you do a smart folder if you're also getting to see those videos in your or on those photos in your photo stream?
I think because I did that before Apple had photo stream.
So now you're just getting used to it?
That's my question too, yeah.
It was just in there and set up, and I've never undone it.
Okay, fair enough. Leander.
And I like going into my camera. I don't know. I never live in that photo stream tab.
Uh-huh.
So I'm always just in photos, so they're just there. I don't know. I should probably just turn off photo stream is really what I should do.
No. Photo stream's awesome. Photo stream's really good. And I'm the exact opposite, Adam. Like, I let my camera roll, you know, fill up until there's no more room on my
That's what I do.
Device. And the thing is, I've got a weird schizo setup. So we keep all of family pictures at home on an iMac that's synced to my wife's photo stream. So it pulls in all her photographs. And then I have a Mac at work at the office that I have set up for my photo stream. And, you know, so what I have to do is plug in my phone to the Mac at home to pull off all the pictures of my kids and all the stuff that, you know, isn't related to work. So, you know, it's like, otherwise I would just, you know, otherwise I would just rely totally on PhotoStream because it takes care of it all for you. I mean, it downloads everything and mm-hmm. saves it on the Mac. And so all you got to do is remember every now and again to delete some pictures. And it's, you know, and it works beautifully. You plug it in and it already knows which pictures it's got. So you can just delete everything in one go. I think the system's fantastic. It works really well.
I kind of have a multi-pronged approach, which I've been trying to be disciplined about. And I want to encourage everyone to be backing up in some way, because if your iPhone gets stolen, the, you know, images that you have in PhotoStream are not high resolution. You can't go get them printed and have them look great at 8x10 or whatever. You know, like, they're just basically lower resolution digital images as far as I've read. So
I thought it sucked them in at full resolution.
It does really? Full resolution, but not full DPI. So if your iPhone, I don't know what the DPI of an iPhone image is. Maybe it's probably like 240 Oops. DPI or something. You playing the Macarena back there?
Sorry, hold on. I don't know what's going on.
It's a good song, Leander. Oh, there you go.
That's the BBC. Sorry, I don't know why it started there.
As far as I am aware, PhotoStream is just low resolution. So, I mean, the dimensions of the image are the same, but the resolution or the DPI is lower. So if you took it and got it printed, it wouldn't look good. It wouldn't look as good as the native file would.
Oh, really?
Huh? Yeah. So that's something to be aware of. So I think the iPhoto thing is a great way to go, because iPhoto is actually really smart at managing and knowing what it needs from your phone and the things that it already has taken. So that's a good way to back it up. And then if you use Time Machine, you're getting a secondary backup there, which I think is
right.
good.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the other thing that sorry, go ahead, Leander.
So I've got Backblaze too, which is one of those online backup services, which is really pretty good.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. There's a backing up in the cloud is another good way to go.
I use CrashPlan.
Yeah, I've been using CrashPlan as well. It's another good one.
I'm fanatical about my backup. So I have SuperDuper, Clone, I have Time Machine, and I have CrashPlan on all my Macs.
I'm right there with you, actually, because it's your data, right? I mean, if you lose, like, let's say your iPhoto library got deleted and, the you know, 5 or 6 years of photos that you've taken are gone, I mean, that would be really heartbreaking. The other thing that I've been doing, and this I found this to work really well, is I don't know if you guys use Flickr, but the new Flickr lets you upload up to a terabyte of data, a terabyte. It's an insane amount of photos. I think it's like at 5 megapixels, which is what the iPhone is. I think it's what, like 500,000 images or something, more than you have. And you can upload directly from your iPhone, and it uploads the native resolution of the files. So that's a great way to go, because then you also have all the files digitally accessible from any computer. So that's what I've been doing. Backing
and you
up
set it to private, right? Set it to private.
Yeah, you can automatically set everything to private, so no one sees all those inappropriate selfies you've been taking with your Johnny Ive book.
Yep,
that's critical. You're going to want to save them all to private, so that they don't show up in all these different albums on Flickr. But yeah, they do allow you to do that, and that way you have everything stored digitally, accessible from any computer, and then you have an iPhoto backup, which is hopefully being backed up to another place. Preferably two, Time Machine, and some type of online service, so that way you're safe. And then you get to save a bunch of space on your iPhone. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but my phone probably has 8 to 10 gigs of photos and videos on them. I know, Adam, yours doesn't.
No.
You would never probably get past 2 gigs.
No, I was just – I'm actually – now you've stressed me out, because I went and looked at my camera roll. I've got 60 photos in there.
That's stressing you out. I think I have all of 2012 on my iPhone still. I need to delete it. But anyway, hope that helps you guys get your camera roll sorted out. Back those things up, guys. Back those things up. You guys, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. What say you?
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
Leander, you always sound so disappointed when we're going to wrap it up.
I am sad. This is the highlight of my week.
I know that you like just to keep the show going and going and going, but we'll be back next week.
Okay.
I promise. Besides, we have to give those books away. So that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Adam, thanks for hopping back and coming back on the show with us. Always love having you on.
Oh, yeah, anytime. We got to get you over on. We got to go the other way one of these times, get you over on the podcast.
Oh, that would be awesome. That'd be a lot of fun. So, yeah. Yeah, thanks for being back. Leander, thanks for joining us again. Always love having you on.
Thank you.
Sir Leander Kinney. You're a sir, right, Leander?
It'll be a sir soon. Yeah,
that's what I thought. The Queen's been calling, but. You haven't gotten back to her yet. Anyway, hey, you know, the conversation continues on Twitter. Adam is MattCast, M-A-C-C-A-S-T.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Leander's L. Caney, K-A-H-N-E-Y. I'm Matt Arifon, E-R-F-O-N. And, of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. This has been the CultCast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night. Thank you, all of you, for listening, and we will see you guys next time. Booyah!
Huh.
I didn't even stumble that time. That was good.
Pretty good.
Normally I spit everywhere and flub my words.
I've caught it in my podcast a couple times and it drives me nuts.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
You know, yeah. Your audio sounds really good.
Oh, okay, cool.
This is a treat.
My rich, deep baritone voice.
Yeah.
Through loud and clear.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I'd use the word baritone.
I know. I sound like a weird little kind of castrato, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's amazing.
Oh my God, I do Mac Break Weekly.
Hey, I heard that
oh
you did.
My goodness,
I heard
me.
That you chose the Sonos.
I'm so surprised.
Of course you did. Somebody tweeted that at me. I'm like, what did you expect him to choose? That's the only pick he ever has.
You always pick the Sonos.
Yes.
Every week.